Anne Waring. So let's give it up for Paul.
Which is much better than speaking dead. Some of you are getting it. All right, well, good to be down here. I used to know where I worked. You know, that thing you get in your car and your car takes you there and you don't have to think about it? It's over now. I now have an office in Lake. So some days I start work at Lake. Some days I start work at Bethel because I have senior team meetings. Some days I teach here in third year. And other days I'm at the Civic and it's like I actually have to think every day when I'm driving to work. None of that, like, it takes you there. So I nearly went to Bethel this morning, but I made it here. So, cool. We just had a great conference. And how many got to the conference? Any of the conference sessions? A few of you. If you have a chance to get Thursday Morning by Steve Thompson, I'd thoroughly recommend it. It was, I thought, well, certainly messed up my theology anyway, put it that way. If I had one, but it, whatever I had going on before that got messed up. So, but before the conference, Bill had said several times, power and wisdom. This is the power and wisdom 1-2 punch. And halfway through the conference, I'm thinking, well, what are you saying on Sunday morning? And I really felt I was meant to talk about beauty. And for me, Bill's definition around wisdom is that wisdom is creativity, integrity, and excellence. And I can't do creativity without beauty. The word doesn't work in my head. If I say creativity, beauty comes out the other ear kind of thing. It's just it's the only way I can kind of say it, really. It's like, I hear that. So I felt that's where I was meant to go, and that's what I want to talk about. And some of you might have heard some of this, but the likelihood it will come out quite differently. That's my prophetic word anyway. But actually, I do just want to quickly do something. I felt a very, very, very good friend of mine. I just want to pray for somebody, and I want to ask you to join with me. 15-year-old young man, Isaac. He's the son of my doctor friends from Fargo, North Dakota. He had a pericardectomy on Friday, which is crazy major surgery at 15. And they're just having a tough day, so he just texted me. So just agree with me, will you, that... and actually, I want you to agree something else. I just gave them a prophetic word. I said, he's the son of your promise. Isaac is the son of Abraham's promise. But I believe, I just felt like he was the son of their promise right now. And all the promises that they've been given, he's the son of the Father. I just pray for Isaac right now and for Ted and Jana, my very good friends, my heroes. And that you would right now, you would minister not just peace, but you would minister the kind of power that changes everything that needs to change in Isaac's body, that he will fulfill all of the purposes that you have for his life. And that not only that, that he will actually be the evidence of the fulfillment of the promises you've given Ted and Jana. That he will be the evidence of that. And that everyone will know it. And everyone will know one thing about you because of Isaac, that you are good. That will be the testimony of his life in Jesus' name. Amen. Thanks. I needed to do that because it was in my somewhere hovering around there. Anyway. Well, this morning I was just looking for one, I was researching one thought around beauty, and I think I put either 4 or 5 words in Google. I put, in a line, I've learned not to put the ands and these because it doesn't listen to those anyway, so it doesn't understand any sequence. So I put beauty, story, motivation, and success. 4 words in Google. Like, I just put them in like that. And my whole page filled up with weight loss. I'm like, all right, I think I'm doing okay at the moment. I'm not too bad, you know, I'll lose a few more pounds. But it kind of really sort of reinforced something. And that is that if I say beauty, what we hear is not the right message. And that most of the time, see, if you put those 4 words sort of somehow into my head, or you put beauty into my head, if I take anything outside of kingdom, I will get something that is shallow. I will get something that is temporary. And I will probably get something that is linked to the sexual, out of beauty. And probably added to that, it's typically feminine. Like, I mean, guys can see beauty in a woman, but beyond that, we kind of struggle with using the word beauty. And I don't know whether I'm the only guy. I wasn't in first service, so I'm assuming I won't be in this service. The only guy that struggles to see Jesus as beautiful. Like, if I sing, you know, Jesus, you're beautiful to me, it's like, it's a weird picture. And the problem is because I'm importing a definition from outside of the kingdom into something that is kingdom. So this word beauty, it's ended up with this shallow definition, you know, and we associate it with the billboards on the side of the road, you know, that's advertising the miracle cream that will make me beautiful and stuff like that. And yet the world's beauty is so shallow, it's so temporary, and it is so attached to sexuality. Now, it's not that sexuality isn't in there, but it's not all that there is. And I really do believe that we need to understand this. We need like the Google search feature of our head to come up with something better than weight loss if we put those words in there. I mean, all right, maybe some of us need that, but you know what I'm saying? It's like, I thought it was kind of funny. Searches often do amuse me, actually. I was just searching for something that was not even to do with beauty. I was looking for a verse in the Bible, and in the middle of my search, there was a plastic surgeon popped up. And I can only assume that somewhere in the name, they'd used a Greek word or something. It's just funny. So they just amuse me how those things happen. But so I want to do a little bit of unpacking of this word. I believe that by the end of it, you will realize that understanding beauty is a key to your destiny. It's a key to becoming childlike. And it's a key to you fulfilling your purpose on the planet. And one of the things that Steve said in his message on Thursday morning, Steve Thompson's, he talked about the why we're alive, and the way I interpret it, the why I'm alive is to reveal him. The why we're alive is to reveal him in all his fullness. And that beauty is a key part of that. Now, if I talk to the Greeks about beauty, they will give me a definition which is attached to time. It's fascinating. In fact, one of the Greek words for beauty is the word from which down the line we get hour, the hour. It's connected. And that doesn't mean an hourglass figure, by the way. Some of you got that joke. Maybe it's more British or something, I don't know. But whatever. The Greeks connect beauty to time. Now this will change something in you. So it means that if you take the perfect peach, it is beautiful, and there is a moment when it is. A week earlier, it wasn't. A week later, it isn't. But that peach, there's a moment when you know that peach or whatever, but peach is the best example I know of a piece of fruit that has that moment when you eat it, you go, that was perfect. Well, it's because its beauty is attached to time. And the Greeks use the definition, one of their definitions of beauty is to be in one's finest hour. See, the problem with our definition of beauty is we attach it to the shallow, the surface, what we can see. And it's so linked to time in the wrong way. It's like it's passing. And the problem with that is that we're losing something, we're missing something. Actually, this is a key to the guys being able to say, Jesus, you're beautiful. Because Jesus' beauty peaks at the cross. It peaks at the ugliest moment visually, but the most beautiful moment eternally. You see, the Greek's definition is being in one's finest hour. That's beauty. Now, that's going to help some people who feel like their days are past in some way. You know, they're not quite as beautiful when they look in the mirror as they were. Well, the reality is that that's because we're using the wrong definition to define our beauty. It's kind of like the little girl who's dressed too old and the older lady who's dressed too young. There's something that offends us about that. It's this offense that goes on. It's because they're missing it. Because there's a beauty that a 5-year-old has and a beauty that a 55-year-old has and a 95-year-old has. And it's not shallow, it's not temporary, and it's not sexual. But the definitions that we've embraced are shallow, temporary, and sexual. Does this make sense? You've gone very quiet on me. I'm making you think or something Sunday morning. The Greek's definition of beauty is inseparable from time, which is why the death of Jesus on the cross is the most beautiful event of all time. It's ugly on the outside, but when you attach it to eternity, it is the most beautiful event, moment of all time. And our problem is that we have had the wrong definition of beauty. I sort of said this, but I didn't say it as succinctly in first service, and I'll come back to it. But it's as if we've kept beauty outside of the church and glory inside of the church. And I'll tell you why that matters in a minute, but we have. And the problem is that then when we try and bring beauty into the church, we're bringing the wrong definition with it. And we need to redefine it. The Egyptians, their definition is beauty is in the eye of the beholder. There is some truth in that, but it's limited. I played around with a definition for me. Some of you will have heard it. I had written in my Bible alongside Psalm 27, the verse that says, "One thing I ask, that I may seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, and there behold your beauty." I had written alongside that and still do, but I began to answer it, hopefully. What is beauty? We have to answer this. When if you just take that one verse, you say that verse, well, if you're looking for beauty, you better know what it looks like. You better have a definition for it. You'll be pursuing the wrong thing. So I created a definition, which is that beauty is an attraction of the soul, which invites to intimacy, by which I mean invites us to get to know it more, and always demands a question. So the guys understand it. You know, beautiful girl, attraction, invitation to intimacy. Hold that thought. Ask a question. Will you marry me? The sequence works. Totally works. And it doesn't mean you have to live in church either. Like, one thing I ask, that I may seek, that I dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. Even weeks, conference weeks, when it feels like you do, that's not what it means. It means that I may live in the constant awareness of your presence, and when I do that, behold your beauty. In other words, behold what attracts this soul of mine. Behold what makes this heart beat faster. Beauty is an attraction of the soul that invites to intimacy, that always demands questions. And I believe that that question is, how do I take that which is beautiful to me and use it to bring glory to you? Bill attaches, you know, this to wisdom, and I love that. I'll bounce around a few verses. If you go to Exodus 28, verse 2, "You shall make holy garments for Aaron your brother, for glory and for beauty." Wow. Twice in Exodus, for glory and for beauty, for beauty and for glory. But then look what he says after this. "And you shall speak to all the skillful persons whom I have endowed with the spirit of wisdom, that they may make Aaron's garments to consecrate him, that he may minister as priest to me." Stunning, isn't it? Stunning, that connection, that making the cap, making the tunics, requires men and women who have the spirit of wisdom on them, and it's for beauty and for glory. Beauty is a big deal in the Bible. Probably a bigger deal than we realize, which means that if we define it wrongly, we've got a problem. See, the skillful workers are the ones that know how to make something that is for glory and for beauty. I was just saying earlier, we've kept glory in the church and beauty outside of the church. And we need to mix the two. I've said before in my first book, the definition you place on glory will determine where you expect to encounter it. Which means if you have a church-based definition of glory, you'll only expect to encounter it in church. But God's glory is the result of God expressing himself. There's a whole lot of glory out there that needs to be encountered. But if our definition is limited to the church, we've got a problem. Then we've left beauty outside of the church. We've got to do something about this. We've got to redefine glory, redefine beauty, and then marry the two. Should be beauty and glory out there and beauty and glory in here. So Exodus, we see this picture that God is saying to Moses, make garments for glory and for beauty. What's interesting there is that one of those garments is the turban that would have been worn. It's the cap, the turban, the head covering of the priests. Well, if you go to another place where beauty is mentioned in the Bible, you'll go to Isaiah or Isaiah 61. I laugh about it. When I first came here, I was told I needed to say Isaiah, otherwise nobody would understand me. I didn't have the courage in the early days to say which is the other word or book of the Bible that it would be confused with if I say Isaiah. So somewhere I'm now just confused. I don't really know. My language is somewhere half between America, England, and prison language, probably. But you go to Isaiah 61, you see a phrase, beauty for ashes. Ashes were poured on people's heads. They were a sign of grief, a sign of mourning. Sometimes it was almost a way that somebody was kind of put out of a community, the sackcloth and ashes. You can't be with us right now. And Isaiah says, beauty for ashes. The interesting thing is that the word there for beauty is a head covering. See, some people's minds are in the ashes. Some people's minds are in grief. Some people's minds are in mourning. Some people's minds are in everything that's negative. And Isaiah there is prophesying beauty for ashes. I'm going to minister into that at the end. It's another place where we see beauty and the power of beauty. Beauty for ashes. See, beauty as well in Song of Solomon. Of course, we'd expect to see it there. We see the beauty there in Song of Solomon that makes my heart beat faster with one glance of your eyes. It's the picture of it's the song of the bride. It's an illustration of how we can be attracted to beauty. Beauty is meant to make my heart beat faster. Beauty is meant to clear up some thinking in my head. Beauty is a result of skilled workmanship. It's very different from the shallow, surface, temporary sexual definition that the world has basically created around us. And then we see in Ezekiel a passage that I've grown to love, which is kind of weird because it's about the devil, but I've grown to love it. Ezekiel 28, where it describes the devil. And the description of him is this: full of wisdom, perfect in beauty. Wow, I have a feeling that the design that God used to design Lucifer is the same template for us. That's what we're meant to achieve, being full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. But here's what I believe happened. And that is that when Satan, Lucifer, fell, so did beauty. And that something which was given to mankind to point people to God became something that was used to fulfill our lusts and our desires and draw people away from God. And actually, in the garden, we see that the fruit was pleasing to the eye, and it led to us being deceived. And beauty, the beauty of that fruit, as it were, deceived us and took us away from God. You see, beauty is a gift to us. It's our gift. Our ability to recognize what beauty is a gift to us. How many of you have seen those mosaic picture things where they take a gazillion photographs, move them all around, and they look like something else, yeah? They take your family album and get the Mona Lisa out of it, yeah? Usually, something like that. Most of you know what I'm talking about. I think that we're a bit like that mosaic. That God took a little piece of him and he put it in us. You see, it's a unique little bit of him. The Chris Cruz piece. He goes, I had this piece of me reserved for Chris Cruz. The job of Chris Cruz the rest of his life is to discover that piece. But then when you put us all together, 7 billion of us all together, with our little pieces, push them all together, you end up with that mosaic. And it's not the Mona Lisa, it's God. It's finding this little piece that's beautiful. He made us in his image. You see, your goal is to discover that, your piece, the piece of you that's beautiful, the piece that you were given to reveal his beauty. It looks different. The problem is that we've had this very limited view. See, so we think that the picture's meant to be, I don't know, black and white squares like a chessboard or something. It's not. It's this random mosaic picture pulling together all these little pieces, and that the goal of our lives is to discover what our piece looks like. What's that little piece of me? You see, what you're attracted to is unique. It's absolutely unique. No one else sees beauty the way you see beauty. The problem with the secular definition, you see, is that we get canned beauty. It looks like this. This season, it's skinny girls. This season, it's not quite so skinny girls. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm just using that as an example. So you end up with canned beauty. And the result of that it leaves more people out than it includes. And it's shallow, temporary, and sexual, by and large, and typically feminine. We need to discover that little piece of us so that, as it were, when the mosaic of heaven is put together, we got the right place. Does this make sense? See, he gave you the desires of your heart. He gave you an attraction to things that are beautiful to you, and he gives you those. He put them there in the first place. He put the grid in there in the first place that recognizes it, and then he gives you that. Now, our journey is to discover that. You see, it's unique. You are attracted differently to me, which is really good news, because otherwise we'd all have married one girl. Some of you need to think about that a little bit longer. And so when Satan fell, beauty fell. And the purpose of beauty became perverted. And you see, beauty is meant to take me to him and point other people to him. But when I don't do that, I think one of the problems with the great talents on the planet is that if they don't know God, their creative ability makes them a god and makes their artwork idols. And they have nowhere to point it to. Because creative ability was given to us to point people to the Creator. So if we don't point to the Creator, we end up not knowing what to do with our talent. Which is my little theory of why we see too many Robin Williams front page news items. And some of the other greats who lose their lives, I think they end up stuck and not knowing what to do with their great talent. But their great talent is because something's beautiful to them, and they take what is beautiful to them. They were meant to point to a creator. But the church has had such a limited view of this that they haven't found a place in the church. to take their talents and to bring them to their full potential. Does this make any sense at all? That what is beautiful to me is meant for me to take and to use it to bring glory to His name. But we've had such limited views. We haven't. How did we miss? It's only the second book in the Bible. We missed the fact that the guy that made the caps and the tunics was filled with wisdom. How did we miss it? I mean, like, everyone must have got as far as Ezekiel 28 in their read through the Bible challenge, you know? You might not have got past Leviticus, but surely you made it through there. But we didn't even get the message from there. And so we've ended up with people who don't realize that what they do is because of what they love, and what they love is because He put a little piece of Him in them, and that what they do with their hands is the legitimate expression of being made in the image of God and was given to bring glory to His name. See, beauty's outside the church, glory's in the church, and we've got to bust this thing because for beauty and for glory. And so beauty fell. Beauty fell. Beauty's perverted. I was thinking in first service, I was singing in my head the song, "Oh, worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness." I can't remember the last time I was singing that hymn anywhere. But I realized what a terrible hymn it is if you sing it out of religion. It's awful. "Oh, worship the Lord in the beauty of a bunch of rules. Oh, worship the Lord in a beauty of somebody telling me how to live my life. I worship the Lord in this religious death, so to speak." But it's because it's so wrong. I worship the Lord in the beauty of being totally other. I worship the Lord in the beauty of being so completely set apart to fulfill your purpose, your plan on this planet, that you will bow down and worship Him. There's nothing else you can do. But you see, holiness has had this definition of a set of rules of things you do. And I think somewhere I need to listen to what I said the first service. But I feel like I found a definition for holiness. And it is the discovery of who you are and being fully that. Because that's being so totally set apart, being so totally other, that all the other attractions are irrelevant. You don't need anyone to say no, because you've got this attraction that says yes. And discovering it. Then we'll sing. Maybe we'll re-sing the song and it will mean something. I worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. I worship the Lord in the awareness of I have discovered me. I've discovered the peace of Him that looks like me and the piece of me that looks like Him. And when that comes fully alive and is fully activated, everything else will bow the knee. Everything else will be second in priority. That the garden was perfect, was full of wisdom. Perfect in beauty. That's where we began. We were created in His image, created by the Creator. We are the created. I think that there are so many places where it's like there's the Creator's power and there's the created's power. There's the Creator's wisdom and there's the created's wisdom. There's the beauty of the Creator and there's the beauty of the created. And I feel like we're on this journey to bring these closer together, to bring definitions that actually make sense of this. When I think about beauty falling, I'm then like, okay, the purpose of beauty. The purpose of beauty is to point all mankind back to the Creator. That's the purpose of it. That's what it was given to you for. And we need to find that again. I said at the beginning, I'll unpack for you. I'll take you to the key of destiny. I'll take you to a key of childlikeness. And I'll take you to the key of fulfilling your purpose on the planet. Let me go to childlikeness for a minute. Everyone wants to be childlike, don't they? Don't you? You don't want to be childish, though, do you? One or two, maybe. Beauty is the key to being childlike. Because kids, everything's beautiful. I've read a book, I've quoted it so many times that I'm sure I have sold more copies of this book than my own. Beauty Will Save the World by Brian Zand. It's a phenomenal book. Second chapter of that book talks about wonder. And he says that wonder is beauty and mystery. And that a life without beauty and mystery is a life without wonder. And a life without wonder is a kind of deep poverty. It's messed me up pretty much the whole year. See, when I read it, he doesn't say it in the chapter. When I read it, I realized that's childlike. Matthew, Jesus says, you can't enter the kingdom if you don't come as a child. That's a little scary. I just don't think we've spent much time working out what it looks like to be a child. See, a child, it's all mystery and beauty, isn't it? Everything's beautiful and they're not afraid of mystery. I think we need to lie on our back and look at the stars a little more. There are just some things that are meant to stay as a mystery. I love it. I had this conversation the other day, and I love getting to the place of tension of in the beginning God. I love that place. I'm not always sure what to do with it, but I just love that place. In the beginning God. Well, what was before God? Well, no, in the beginning God. No, even the beginning needs a beginning. Like, how did God become God? It's like, no, it's a mystery. And the only alternative people have come up with is Big Bang. And even a Big Bang needs another beginning. Because you can't have a bang without another beginning. You just can't. It's a mystery. It's meant to be a mystery. I think we need to look at the stars a bit more and go, I don't get it. Like, apparently, they keep on getting bigger, this universe. Like, I don't get it. I have enough trouble in my little world, let alone thinking about, it's a mystery. Mystery and beauty are keys to being childlike. Kids wonder, don't they? They walk around with their eyes popping out of their heads. Beauty is a key to childlikeness. Like Bill says, I've heard him dozens of times since I've been here. Every child's creative. Every child's artistic until they get to school, as it were, and have it knocked out of them. Why? Because somebody's trying to create a box. And I'm not knocking teachers. I love them. But we still have an education system that was designed for an industrial revolution. So we sit in lines and we churn people out mechanically like a manufacturing line. And we live in a creative age. We need some different ways of educating in a creative age. I think it's the creative age anyway. I know people still call it the information age, but me and a guy called Pink think it's the creative age. Well, information age is about 40 years old, but it must be due a new age, you know? And in actual fact, we're actually getting a little bit fed up with information if you think about it. Kind of overdosed a little bit on information. Like, you know, Google search, you get weight loss. I mean, what, you know, it's like, not going to bother doing that. Now, actually, very seriously, I personally believe that one of the things, I didn't say this first service, but I had to bring coffee in now into any really anointed message, needs to have coffee involved in it. But my theory is that the reason why there are so many craft coffee shops rising up is because there is a desire for excellence, beauty, and experience. And you'll find the guys behind the counter are very often very, very clever people. Like, they're nuclear physicists and nuclear scientists. Like, they've got plenty of information there, but what they really want to do is produce excellent coffee that is beautiful and give you an experience drinking it. It's a little theory of mine, but I think it's kind of, something's going on. It's because creativity, there's something stirring to do with creativity and excellence, etc., etc. Anyway, being childlike. Which was me talking about coffee. Does this make sense? Beauty is a key to being childlike. See, the problem is you sit down with your paint and you mess around and it's an absolute mess. And the problem is you're going, oh, well, that won't sell for anything. That's not the point. But you see, we've been given this definition that somehow we have to achieve that. Now, I love great art, so don't get me wrong. I have a high value for great art. But the point is that if we take the secular definition of beauty, it will not allow us to discover what really is beautiful. And kids, they just do this stuff, don't they? Everything's beautiful and everything's a mystery and it's okay. And then we get older and we kill that stuff. G.K. Chesterton said, God is the greatest child in the universe. And all the rest of us have grown cynical with age. It's exactly what's happened. I love the... Campolo is one of my favorite preachers. I came close to maybe going and doing a conference with him, which would have... I think I'd have resigned, retired, quit, called it, I'm done. That's the only thing I ever... But he's been my hero for a long time. And I always remember him talking about daisies. And he's like, how did God create daisies? You know, it's like... Like, he created one daisy, and he's like, daisies, that's amazing. Let's have another daisy. Like God just gets excited over the next daisy. Like, we trample on them, but he's still going, it's a daisy. It's amazing. It's a daisy. Look at the daisy I made. Because he's the oldest child in the universe. And all of us, the rest of us, have grown cynical with age. It's the key to childlikeness. And we need that. We desperately need that. It's the key to discovering your destiny. It's to discover what's beautiful to you. What's beautiful to you? What do you love? What, as Song of Solomon says, makes your heart beat faster with one glance, one look at it? Our little Luke, he's not little anymore, he's 6 foot something. It's happened nearly every time we get ready for a big soccer football match on the TV when he was growing up. And we'd be sitting down ready to watch, you know, FA Cup final or something like that. And as soon as it was on, he'd look for a ball and go outside and play. He'd do the same with tennis. He did the same with athletics. Like, we took him to an athletics club once. He goes out there. He'd never done a thing to our knowledge. He put a high jump there, and he does a backflip. Yeah, what was he, 6, 7? It's like, because he saw that, it made his heart beat faster. I want to do that. Like, what makes your heart beat faster? What is you look at that and go, I want to do that. That makes my heart beat faster. It'll be unique to you. That the problem is, you see, that we end up trying to compare it or fit it into the box. So this is what the world thinks should make your heart beat faster. No, what makes your heart beat faster? What do you love? What's beautiful to you? What are you passionate about? But the problem is, you see, we haven't read Exodus chapter 28 and realized that doing that is actually legal. We had Jim Cash in here first service. I used him as an example. He's been around here forever. He's one of the original families, part of Bethel Church, welcomed Sue and I into his home when we came here, into our home group. You know, and he's now on the maintenance team. When he's up a ladder 26 feet up, he's operating the spirit of wisdom. Trouble is, we don't see it that way. We need to learn to look that way. We need to see that is legal, legitimate, valid ministry. And not just ministry. We're not just trying to make it fit. No, it's the spirit of wisdom. What do you love? It's the key to your destiny, to discover that little piece of you that is that mosaic piece on the wall, as it were, that reveals Him. What do you love? What do you love to do? Just what do you love to do? What makes you feel alive? You got Eric down here, I can't help, he's been there first service, second service, same place. He loves tennis. It's like, that's legal. It's legal for him to raise his son to be the best tennis player in the world and to know that requires the spirit of wisdom to do it. It's legal. My generation, we didn't get that. Somewhere that would have been wrong. He can only actually be the second best in the world because I want to leave room for a Brit to win Wimbledon that year that his son had. Nah, it's all right. It's the key to your destiny. It's the key to being childlike. And it's the key to you fulfilling the purpose of God on this planet, because you'll reveal Him. You're made in His image. He's the creator. He created you. They say of artists that they do two things. They copy and they express themselves. But God had nothing to copy. So He just expressed Himself. And you happened. You happened. Which means if you don't express yourself, the piece of Him that was meant to be expressed through you won't be expressed. And that's been shut down, hasn't it? It's been shut down because it didn't fit the mold. That's not the mold. That's not beautiful. That's not legitimate. That's not this. That's not that. That's beauty that's meant to be in the world, so don't bring it in the church. And that's glory that's in the church, so you won't find it out there. So we've ended up with a confused generation. But when God expressed Himself, you happened, I happened. And I don't know whether you ever thought of this. I have, because my brain. Once there was nothing on this planet made by man. I kind of can't work out why there aren't some really big holes where everything got dug up. Because everything has either been grown, bred, dug up, or created in a laboratory by man. It's stunning, isn't it? So where did we get the idea that it's not legitimate? So what do you love? What do you love to do? What outcomes do you love? These are the keys to your destiny. And they are the keys directly linked to you fulfilling the purpose that God had by putting man on the planet. And if you don't do it, it might not get done. Like if God, I'll stay with Eric's son. If God put a little piece of him in Eric's son that loves tennis, yeah? If that doesn't get nurtured, that expression of God unique to Eric's son won't happen. So if Eric raises his son that, oh no, son, I know he won't, but it, you know, if he did, like, no, tennis, that's of the devil. Like, you need to be a preacher, son. Like, that will be killed by religion. Instead of the true beauty of holiness, which is for him to discover the unique piece of him that he is, and for him to be fully alive. And the key is beauty. Is that all right? I want to close by ministering in four directions. And there'll be a little bit of me, a little bit of introduction to each of these four directions. But during first service, during worship, I ended up with these four phrases, four words. And I was just playing around with the thought, and I really believe it makes sense for us. And that there are four groups of people. Now, I'm going to encourage you just to take one of these. Don't be the person that takes all four. Just take one of these and get the one. Yeah? You might be, all four apply to me. So just take one. The first is this. I believe there are people who are disturbed in their minds. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that you should be in a psychiatric hospital. I'm saying you're disturbed. Like, your mind is disturbed. It's not in peace. You know, if you disturb the books on a bookshelf, it doesn't mean to say that you destroyed them all. They're just a little bit disturbed. They're not quite in order. Yeah, it's that. It's that you can't quite get your thoughts together, or every time you start thinking, even maybe creatively, you end up with negative thoughts. You end up with grief. It's the Isaiah picture. And he wants to give beauty for ashes. He wants to put a new head covering on you, on your mind. Your mind's in the ashes. It's disturbed. And grief's okay. Just as a quick aside, if you're in a season of grief right now because you've recently lost someone, that doesn't necessarily need dealing with. I believe that grief is actually a very healthy aspect of man's psyche. And one of the dangers in the church, my wife and I were around somebody recently, and they said that in like 3 days after major grief, I'm going to get a sozo. You don't need a sozo. You need to grieve. So grief's legal. I just want to make sure. But if your mindset can't get out of grief, can't get out of sadness, can't get out of the negative, Then I believe today he wants to give beauty for ashes. Disturb minds. Point number one. Some of you, that will be you. He wants to change that. He wants to put the turban on your head. The one, as it were, that God described to Moses for beauty and for glory. Is that okay? That will be some of you. I'm not going to ask you to put your hands up or single you out at all. The second group of people I want to minister to are you've been disappointed. You have disappointed hearts. And your disappointment is making you afraid of risking looking at beauty again. It may be relationships. I think it's included. I don't want to only make it relationships, but I do believe it's included. You see, you make my heart beat faster with one glance of your eyes requires something. You have to glance. Some people are afraid of risking the glance because they risked the glance before and they didn't get anything back. They got rejected. They saw a head turned away. Literally with relationships, but there might be other scenarios. You risk glancing at something that was beautiful to you. You risk maybe glancing at a dance or music. You've done it once before and it's like you got rejected, you got hurt, it didn't work out. Risk the glance. You've got a disappointed heart. It's kind of like this. I used this illustration first service. I think the phrase is the same in America, but you've been stood up on a date. Yeah, you go to the date and you're stood up. The person doesn't show up. You've been disappointed. That person had another appointment. I think there's some people that need their hearts healed up. You've got disappointed hearts and you're afraid of risking loving again. You're afraid of risking the glance, the look, because the rejection that happened last time was so painful. Disappointed hearts. Risk the glance. Some of you have got disqualified hands. It's the Exodus picture. You don't realize that it's legal. You don't realize that making Aaron's tunics and Aaron's cap for beauty and for glory was not just legal, but it requires wisdom. And that your gift actually is the spirit of wisdom. You didn't realize it. You had no idea that hitting a tennis ball really well over a net has the spirit of wisdom. You don't realize that sitting sewing, sitting painting, whatever it is, writing, painting, building, you didn't realize and your hands got disqualified. And some of you might even despise your hands. Despise the gift that God has given you. Despise the ability that God has given you. Wish that you had something else. And he gave it to you. It's yours. It's unique. You know, somebody shared with me, I'll just drop this in. It doesn't fit with that, but it's just coming in my head. I'm going to throw it. Somebody shared with me after first service. They said they live with somebody, and this person said to them there that she's, I gather, physically very beautiful, attractive. And everyone always just says, oh, you're so beautiful. And this girl said, I wish I wasn't, because people just think I'm just beautiful and can't do anything else. Isn't it fascinating that there are people who can do something who wish they couldn't do that and wish they were beautiful, and there are people who are beautiful who wish they weren't just associated with being physically attractive? I think there's some people in here that need to sort that one out. Like, accept you, embrace you, embrace the gift of your hands, and embrace the physical attributes that he's given you. Disqualified hands and distracted spirits. Psalm 27. One thing. Just one thing. You've never quite got the one thing. See, the distraction in the garden led to man being deceived. Eve saw that the fruit was beautiful to the eye, and the attraction to the fruit distracted her from him. And we have distracted spirits. Some of you have distracted spirits. Some of you, it's Psalm 27. You need to get it for you. One thing I ask, that I may seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, and there behold your beauty. I feel like there's some distracted spirits. He's looking for some one thing. It's not all. But it is that consecration. It is that dedication. It is, I'm going after this. Disturbed minds, disappointed hearts, disqualified hands, distracted spirits. And through it all, what he's trying to do is to get us to find our destiny, to fulfill our purpose, and be childlike. And all of that just comes free. But I want to invite you to stand. And I want to minister into these four things. I really do. I want to encourage you to take one. Just take a moment. Choose your one. Disturbed minds. It's just disturbed. It's not, you don't need treatment. It's just a bit disturbed. Your thought patterns. Disappointed hearts. You're afraid of the glance. You're afraid of picking up the paintbrush again. Disqualified hands. You've never been qualified. You've never had anyone say that. It's a gift of God. Spirit of wisdom. Where you paint that house, spirit of wisdom. And distracted spirits. Consecrated. Lives given to him. Lives that can say one thing. Father, I ask right now that you would come and minister to everyone in their unique place. And it's all about beauty. It's all about beautiful thoughts in our minds. It's all about allowing ourselves to be attracted to beauty. It's all about realizing that the gift that you've given us and our ability is beautiful. And it's all about spirits that are consecrated to the one thing, to seeing your beauty. And Father, specifically I ask for us guys that you would unlock our ability to see beauty. You'd unlock our ability to see beauty, that it wouldn't be surface, it wouldn't be sexual, it wouldn't be feminine, and it wouldn't be temporary. But you would unlock a generation of men who know what beauty looks like and will give their life for it. I pray right now, if yours was the mind, I want you to imagine he put the turban on your head. He put the cap, Aaron's cap. Cap of the priest, you put it on your head. Beauty for ashes. If yours was the heart, risk the glance. Make a decision this week. You'll risk the glance. You'll risk looking at something that was being removed from you. You'll risk, maybe it's believing for the relationship, the guy or the girl of your dreams, that you'll risk the glance. And if it's turned away from you, then you'll risk it again. Heal hearts right now. Disqualified hands. Maybe you write. Maybe you build. Maybe you're paid to think, to speak. It doesn't matter what it is. It's that skill, that career, that task, that thing that you are so good at. I want you to look at it as if it was the gift he gave you on Christmas Day. It's the most beautifully wrapped gift. He took incredible trouble to wrap it just for you. And that you would receive it as a gift from him and say, I want to use this to bring glory to your name. Distracted spirits, make Psalm 27 your own. One thing. And Father, for everyone, I pray that you would help us all to discover what we love. Reveal our destiny. Reveal it in this most beautiful place of the things that we love, that we're passionate about, that are beautiful to us, that make our hearts beat faster. Wow, what a good God you are, that you would allow us to fulfill your purpose on the planet by doing things we love, by doing things that make our heart beat faster, by doing things that make us feel alive. We'll worship you in the beauty of holiness. We'll worship you in the beauty of being totally other, totally uniquely us. And Father, would you release a generation who are childlike, who bring beauty in the church and take glory out, and that we'd be so good at it that we can't tell the difference. Thank you, Father. We worship you in the beauty of holiness. Jesus, you're beautiful. You're so beautiful. So beautiful. It was anything but shallow. It was absolutely eternal. And it was the fullness of all that you created in humanity there on the cross. Fully beautiful in every dimension. We love you, Jesus. We bless your name. Amen.
Wow, great word. Wasn't that amazing? Give more of a hand to Paul. That was an incredible word. Guys, I was just feeling just one more thing just to add on. I feel like at times we struggle to see beauty because we haven't actually seen ourselves as beautiful yet. And I really felt there was a real invitation from the Lord this week. If you're willing to open up your hearts and ask this question, actually willing to receive the answer, I think if you just ask the Holy Spirit, what is beautiful about me? I think he wants to share some things with you this week about that. And I feel like in that process of seeing yourself as beautiful, it's like your eyes get open up because you're seeing yourself the way God sees you, which allows you to see the way God sees. Okay, so if you have enough courage,